certainly all had a lot of fun on Friday evening as 300 or 400 people gathered in our parking lot and enjoyed the treats that everybody was so generous to provide. And I was really thankful that God withheld the rain until we were done. And so that was great. There were some cars that were really well decorated. And I didn't know somebody was out judging these, but apparently somebody was. And the person that wins the first prize, which is a $20 gift card to Dutch Brothers, goes to Steve Rose. It was an interesting decoration, believe me. And in second place, I don't know if she got it for the car so much, she got it for the cakes that she made for the cakewalk. But someone once said that if Carol Grosky cooked dirt, I'd eat it. So, Carol, come and get it. Yeah. Oh, boy. It's good to have fun. And who said Christians can't have fun? We can enjoy ourselves. There has been a recent effort by the president, the Pentagon, the Secretary of Defense. They have asked, or I guess they really ordered, you might say, the various branches of the military to lower the standards so that women could qualify to serve in the elite fighting forces of those four branches. In other words, in order to be a Navy SEAL, Army Ranger, Special Forces, we're asking you to lower your standards so they can become one of those. And I remember when I heard that, I thought, ain't no way that I would want to fight alongside somebody who had to have their standards lowered in order for them to make it. But, and I don't know, and I guess from what I understand, the Marines had had 29 women try to become infantry officers, and the 29 women that tried, all 29 failed, and only four made it past the first day. Well, there's probably a good reason for that. I don't like lowering standards just so somebody can qualify. Do you? How would you like to go to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, you look up there and you say, see that? You went to, yeah. That must have been very, well, no, really, they lowered the standard so I could make it. If I would get up and run. That's not a good thing. But it's even worse when churches across America have lowered their standards in order to fill their buildings. There's been a movement along. If you look at some of these church buildings, they're very big, they're huge, they're very elaborate. But unfortunately, in many cases, they're full of members and not disciples. You see, we no longer call people to become disciples. We just want to be members. Jesus said, go into all the world and make disciples. He did not say, go into all the world and try to get as many people into the building as you can, in whatever way you have to do it. Now, unfortunately, I've witnessed that. And not so sure, but what I didn't participate in it to some degree. But Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. And he'll be faced with a lot of people who want to be near him. People just naturally came to him, gathered around him. They wanted to hear him. They wanted to listen to what he had to say. They've heard things about him, and now they wanted to hear and to be a part and to even touch Jesus. When he gets to Jerusalem, he'll be arrested, he'll be tried, and he'll be executed. All of this according to God's plan. Sin is so repugnant to God. Satan has such a hold on humanity that only God can change the way things are. We call it the divine reversal. Jesus, as he makes his way to Jerusalem, is carrying a heavy burden. He's got basically the load of the world on his shoulders as he makes his way there. Before he arrives in Jerusalem, and we don't know the time frame here, as was mentioned in class, Jesus begins in chapter 9 and verse 51. It says he makes his way to Jerusalem. From there until the time he gets to Jerusalem, some 6 months could very well have passed. We have no idea when this took place. All we know is that on his way to Jerusalem, he's met with those who said that they would follow him. Each of these three individuals speak to the subject of discipleship. In verses 57 to 58, we run across the first individual. And as I look at this text, one of the first criteria of being a disciple is that a disciple, we must be discerning. This individual tells Jesus, "I'll go wherever you want to go." And Jesus responds to him and he says, "The foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but I have nowhere to lay my head." And what Jesus is telling him is, before you really make this decision to follow me, you need to understand what it all entails. Discernment is doing an evaluation, examining things in order to draw the proper conclusion. And I'm sure that this may come to as a surprise to many of you. But Satan has found his way into the church. He did not sneak in. He did not slip in through an open door, or an open window. He didn't just come in quietly, secretly. No, in many respects, we opened the door for him and just let him walk in. And Christendom today across America is suffering for it. And the greatest suffering is that for in many cases, they're not aware of what's happening. Now, there's beginning to get some voices. Some voices are beginning to be heard that are saying, we've got something wrong here. But Satan has convinced us that what we need is a savior of convenience. We have chosen a Savior of convenience. We want the benefits, but not what it costs. We want the benefits of being a disciple, but we do not want to have to make the sacrifices necessary to be that disciple. We hear it from those who seek a church that will meet their needs. We call it church shopping. I go to a church, I want to see if that church can meet my needs. And churches have tried. They've tried one after the other. This one comes with a need, we try to meet it. That one comes with a need, we try to meet it. That one comes with a need, we try to meet it. And then we finally realized we can't do it because we're spread so thin that nothing gets accomplished. And Satan has sold us a bill of goods on this. We are called to say no to self. And we find ourselves oftentimes ignoring the words of Jesus. If anyone comes after me, let him deny himself, pick up his cross daily, and follow me. That means that we're going to have to put our wants, our desires, our wishes, all of this self-centeredness on the shelf and focus our attention upon God. We've allowed Satan to impact our thinking. Sin is no longer repudiated. In fact, I'm not so sure that we even know what sin is at times. But society has been able to even tell us that God accepts sin. As you recall in the latest Supreme Court decision, and this came out in the news, and the people in the news, were all the pundits and everything were talking, you know, and then someone said, well, how do you think Jesus would treat these people? And so finally, all of a sudden, these news pundits have become experts on what God thinks and what Jesus is going to accept. And the fact of the matter is, God's already spoken on the subject. Jesus has already spoken on the subject. We know what they think. We know what they're going to do. And all we've got to do is read the book. You see, it's no longer what does God say, but what we feel and how we think God feels. How do you think God feels about this? How do you think God feels about that? Go to the book. He'll tell you. And it's not how He feels, it's what He says. We have allowed Satan to cover the evils of the world. Being friends of the world puts us at odds with God. 1 John chapter 2, beginning at verse 15, do not love the world nor anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of the eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever. The lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, the boastful pride of life, all three of those were in the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3. That's where sin started, and that's where sin continues. We've allowed Satan to convince us that God is impotent. I grew up in a small community. A lot of good people in that community. And we had convinced ourselves that our church was too whatever to the point we could not reach out to a lost world. We see in the world, what we see of our resources, what we see of our strengths, and that determined the fact that we weren't going to do anything, and so we sat in our little corner of the world and we did nothing. God and His Spirit has been pushed out. And the resounding phrase is, we don't have whatever is necessary to do what we really need to do. But I am convinced that God is far greater than all of the obstacles that we have in our church family. There is nothing that God cannot do. We teach our children to sing that song. Our God is so great, so big, and so powerful. There's nothing my God cannot do. And then we grew up and we quit believing that. Our God is not impotent. He controls the weather. He controls the universe. I was reading a little booklet this morning, and this fellow says, you know, the Russians went out into outer space and said there's no God there because they didn't see Him. And he says, well, stop and think about it a minute. Before Columbus discovered America, there were ships out there in the old ocean all the time. He said, the problem is that their ships didn't go far enough. And he said, that's the problem with those Russians. He said, they didn't go far enough. If they'd have went far enough, they'd have found God. I thought, hey, that's pretty good. Our God is not impotent. He created this world. And you know what's interesting about how He created it? He spoke it into existence. That's what He did. Let there be light. Psh, there's light. But that kind of power, is there anything that is involved in that? And that, is there any obstacle we cannot overcome? I don't think so. Because our God is too great. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be preaching. I think God is the only one that knows that. But if the day ever comes that I either die or you get tired of hearing me, there's only one thing that I want to leave this church. There's only one thing I want you to know, and only one thing I want you to practice. You are a praying church. Because a praying church has no limitations. That's all I want. Because I know it doesn't matter how big you are or how small you are, our God is great. He is awesome. To be a disciple of Jesus, we must be discerning. To be a disciple, we must be decisive. In verses 59 and 60, we see Jesus talking to another individual. And I want you to notice that this one is being called to discipleship by Jesus. But the man responds. He says, well, I'm going to go first and bury my dead, bury my father. And Jesus tells him, he says, you let the dead bury the dead. You go and preach the gospel of the kingdom. And oftentimes, we look at that and we say, well, boy, that's pretty insensitive. The problem is we don't understand colloquialism. You see, in the Arab world, when a person says, I need to first bury my dead, he's basically saying, I have family responsibilities. And I cannot leave my family responsibilities. Now, when my family no longer exists, then I am free to do whatever, you see. And that's what he's saying. And that's why Jesus says, well, you let the dead go bury the dead. You go and preach the kingdom of God. What Jesus is telling him, this is your moment. This is your moment. And the thing about moments is that moments are limited. It's possible that this would-be follower would not get another chance. You'd never get another chance, another moment like this. Because moments are limited. They're not always in abundance. So often, we make plans, but our days and weeks are in the hands of God. They're not in our hands. James chapter 4, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. What, do you know what tomorrow will happen tomorrow? What is your life? It is but a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. It was David who said, help me, Lord, to number my days. Psalm 39 and verse 4. You see, life is short. opportunities are limited. And moments are passive. How many times have we allowed opportunities to pass? I want you to look at this individual for a moment. Because Jesus is doing something that He doesn't do very often. In fact, I only know that He did it just a few times. He told Peter, James, and John, and Andrew, follow me. He told Matthew, follow me. He told the rich young ruler, follow me. And He's telling this individual, follow me. And what Jesus is doing is He's calling him to be one of His disciples. That's the language that He's using. Come and be one of my disciples. Follow me. Let me teach you. Let me work with you. Let me show you the miracles of God. Let me. All of this is what Jesus is doing. But you see, He's not going to do that. Moments pass, can never be retrieved. A lady once bought a brand new slip, expensive slip. And she brought it home and she told her husband, this is for a very special occasion. And so she put it in the box. And it stayed in the box. And she had the tissue paper on it. And there it sat, week after week, month after month, waiting for that special occasion. Finally, that special occasion came. It was her funeral. Her husband took it down and gave it to the mortician to put on her. Moments pass. Opportunities. We often say, you know, when I get this or when I get, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And when I've had people say, you know, when I retire, I'm going to be more involved with God. When I get more money, I'm going to be more benevolent with missionaries. You know what? Never happens. It doesn't happen. So opportunities come and opportunities go. And if you have the opportunity, you better be decisive. Take hold of it. Grab it. Because it may pass you by. And moments are for the alert. You see, the young man was not aware of who was speaking to him. Even the apostles were not aware of what was happening. But God is working in each one of you right now. But the question is, are you aware of it? Do you know that God is working in each one of you? Is He getting your attention? I'll go so far as to say this. It's no accident you're living in this town. Okay? I knew a couple that came to this town from Texas, and they spent their whole time moaning and groaning and complaining because they were stuck here. And they were miserable here. They hated here. They couldn't wait to get out of here. And so they wound up in Eugene. They hated it there. Last time I heard, they're back in Texas. And I'm sure they must be rejoicing in the floods. You see, we choose whether to be happy or miserable. And God puts you here. He puts you here for a purpose. And that purpose is not to complain and whine and groan and moan and everything else. But His purpose is you do a ministry while you're here. I've got a job for you, God says. And so and you're the one that's going to fulfill it right here. Yeah, let's not be a Jonah. You all know what happened to Jonah. You don't want to be a Jonah. That's not a good experience. So God has put you here. God has given you this responsibility, this ministry. And also, let me say, He also gave you a job. Where you're working, probably God put you there. I got a ministry for you there. And here's what you're going to do in that ministry. Don't you forget, your allegiance is not to your employer. Your allegiance is to me. Now, if you've got an allegiance to God, your allegiance to your employer will be just fine. And so, God has called us to be where we are, to do what we're doing. And let me say, it's no accident you're here this morning. I'm convinced God is far more active in your life than you may recognize. To be a disciple, we've got to be dedicated. This disciple in verses 61 and 62 had all the wrong priorities. What he wanted to do seemed fair and right, go back and say goodbye to your family and so on and so forth. But Jesus knew what would take place. When I went to Dallas, Texas to go to school, spend time learning there to be a preacher, all of us that went to school there went with the determination, or at least a desire, let's put it that way, we went with a desire to be God's people and to be His spokesman. But I have to be honest with you, that was probably the most difficult 2 years of my life. Those teachers gave us no slack. There was a lot of homework to be done. Work was hard, and so on. And I was beginning to wonder if I was really cut out for this kind of thing, and Indiana informed me that I was. Not in a very nice way. But we had some students that came and they would say, well, if it doesn't work out, I know I can always go home. Would you like to guess how many have returned home? Every one of them. The minute you find that you've got a way out, you'll take it. You've got to be dedicated to be a disciple. Dedication transcends our personal relationships. It was Jesus who said, our love for Him must exceed our love for family. Matthew chapter 10, verses 37 to 39. Listen to what He says. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than Me is not worthy of Me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than Me is not worthy of Me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow Me is not worthy of Me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for My sake will find it. Jesus must always take precedence, even over our closest of relationships. And being a disciple of Jesus was a serious matter. If you read John chapter 9 about the blind man, and notice the consequences of being a disciple of Jesus. He went to follow Jesus, and when he did, that was the end of him being a part of the Jewish community. It was over. I'm not saying ignore family and ignoring their needs. I'm not saying that at all. I'm simply saying that Jesus has to have first place or He has no place. He will not ever accept second place. dedication transcends obligations. The federal government is passing various laws, and some of them are not very cooperative with the Christian faith. Sometimes employers make decisions that are in conflict with what God wants us to do. Resisting can be costly, and it can be painful. But we need to remember that we're God's people. And dedication transcends personal agendas. Remember the passage in James chapter 4 about making plans. It is important to seek God's will when we want to pursue an activity or even a move. I had a couple one time tell me that they were moving to Central Oregon. I said, really? Yeah, I said, what prompts you to do that? Well, the doors of opportunity have been opened up. I said, well. I said, have you prayed about it? Oh, yeah, we prayed about it. And I said, when did you pray? Before or after you made the decision? Well, I guess before. No, he said, I guess we didn't. We made it after. I said, don't go giving God that kind of business. If that's what you want to do, you pray about it. And if the opportunity arises, the opportunity will be given to you to do that. But don't take it on your own. You see, we have to ask ourselves the question, would what we choose to do interfere with my relationship with God? You know, no matter what Paul faced, no matter where he was, no matter what the situation was, even in a prison cell where life was miserable, he made this statement, "For me to live is Christ." He is my everything. Those aren't just words of a good song. For Paul, it was everything. It's not difficult being a Christian, as the word is used in the world. It's not hard. It's pretty easy. In fact, you can believe just about anything and still be called a Christian and claim to be a Christian. But what about being a disciple? What about being a disciple of Jesus where he comes first in everything? And you have such a dedication to Jesus Christ that you will allow absolutely nothing to interfere with your relationship with him. Nothing. Being a disciple is not for the weak and the shallow. Being a disciple is not for the self-centered. As Jesus said, "If anyone comes after me, let him deny himself, pick up his cross, and follow me." Pick up the cross. It's a deliberate act. You choose to do it. You see, all three of these individuals missed an awesome opportunity. They missed out. And to our knowledge, they never got a second chance. What about you? You going to pass up the opportunity? It's your choice. God doesn't hold a gun to your head. And Jesus is simply saying to you, "Follow me." Will you do that? Will you be his disciple? Think about that. while we stand and sing.